It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
How you doing?
I'm good. How you doing? You want some more of my cookie?
Tone has been set. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on the Twitter at Matthew Soce. This show is available as a podcast. It's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog. We have I've had to actually use the blog the last couple of weeks, and we have, did you do the latest...
No, because you didn't tell me what to post.
I just emailed it to you.
I didn't get it.
Check your email during some time.
Okay.
And wow, then I can't tell people to link onto the latest thing because it's not there. But you can check out our blog at...
Filmsociology.tumblr.com. For those of you that don't know, Tumblr is T-U-M-B-L-R.
Like tourable.
Like tourable. But our blog is not tourable.
No. And the voice you heard is a man who's... basketball team is still playing. That's Kobe Slagle. Mm-hmm. I'm Matthew Soce. My team is not playing anymore. And they fired their coach. And that's
a good start to the offseason.
And word has it also Joe Dumars might be out the door as well. So we will see. Well, first off, I want to say special thanks to Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap, as well as Ed Johnson out of Nuvo, and
Mark Dubeck of MarkDubeck.com
for coming, hanging out, and keeping Kobe company. And
that's really what they're here for.
Because if it's just you here in the studio, I mean, you would create something. You know, I don't know. Could you do a 59-minute What Is Kobe Watching?
I don't know. Probably not.
Probably not. So we'll work on that. And so anyway, thank you for them for filling in while I was gone the last 2 weeks. Yes, I was barefoot in the park at Richmond
Civic. And he was barefoot
Civic.
In the park.
See what
I did there? I just
yeah,
did
you took another one
do.
Of my jokes, yep. One of my bits. However, in the shameless plug department, because we're only a minute into the show, May 5th, Sunday, May 5th at Fringe Theater on Mass Ave. It is the Lou Harry... co-production of Going, Going, Gone. It's an improv show. It's half improv, half auction. You have actors who meet maybe once or twice, and then they open up a random box of items. We have no idea what's in them, and then we auction them off to the audience. And the audience have been given various amounts of play money, and it's a lot of fun. Lynn and Emma and I got to see the show in January, and now Lynn and Emma and I are going to do it Sunday, nice. May 5th. So,
Cinco de Mayo.
Oh my goodness, it is Cinco de Mayo. I will have to wait until after the performance to celebrate because I'm not Richard Burton or any of the other Hellraisers. Can't liquidate before performance.
Can't do it.
That's a bad idea.
Won't do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, it has obviously been a very long week for everybody. And by the way, if you think it's been a long week having to listen to all the news that's been going on and all the tragic events, we've also had to be here and make sure it is covered. So we want to thank everybody for hanging in there with us. Of course, we suspended the pledge drive, which will restart on Monday, and hopefully we'll get things back on track. But it, like I said, long week, and we're hoping that this show will bring a little bit of livation, a little distraction in lieu of what has been happening the last few days in Boston and in Texas and elsewhere. So, and that's what the movies do, and apparently that's what movie shows do. At least we'll try our best. Now, one of the other items that is coming up on Sunday is the return of the Vinyl Cafe with Stuart McLean. With very special musical guest Harry Manx. In fact, tomorrow night, on HD1 at 8 o'clock is my third ever Canadian Blues house party. Why do you laugh at that?
I don't know.
It is a two-hour house party mostly devoted to Canadian blues artists. So you'll hear the likes of Harry Manx and Oscar Peterson and Steve Kozak and Shakira Saida and David Wilcox. And they have quite the blues scene up north.
Rush?
Them doing Blue Cheers version of Summertime Blues, not quite. Sorry. Maybe by title, but not by genre. Mm. Hey, if they want to do the Willie Dixon songbook, I would at least listen to it once. Anyway, so I'm doing that on tomorrow night's Blues House Party. In the second half of today's show, you can hear my chat with Stuart McLean from the first time he came into town, and we talked a little bit about the history of Canadian cinema. And later today, I hope, there will hopefully be a link on the Blues House, or the Blues House, or the Film Sociology blog, to a very cool website called Canuxploitation.
Ah,
the complete guide to Canadian B film. That's what I emailed you with the link.
Okay.
So we'll work on that.
Yeah, didn't get that.
Okay, opening in theaters today. Apparently, if you are a fan of actress Olga Kuryenko, this is a good week for you because she's not only this was the young lady who was in Quantum of Solace. She was.
I didn't see it.
I know you got to catch up. Who's going to watch
not
more?
Really.
Who's watched more Bond films, Emma or you? That would be Emma. That would be Emma.
Yep.
Anyway, she's in Oblivion. She's also in the new Terrence Malick film, To the Wonder. And I know you could read Ed Johnson Ott's review of that in Nouveau. You can also go to the Film Yap and check out their reviews of that. Also opening today,
as for our friend Joe Shearer, that is at thefilmyap.com.
You know what's happening at the Film Yap?
Little that. Yep.
Stuff.
Yep.
So thanks,
same old,
Joe.
Same.
Also opening in theaters today. Yes, the third film, no, fourth film, directed by Rob Zombie, The Lords of Salem. Mm. And that little piece of verbal noise means Kobe's not going.
Nope.
Desire. Mm-mm. Not a fan of White Zombie or Rob Zombie?
No, definitely not.
Definitely not.
See, I remember when Rob Zombie was White Zombie.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember the White Zombie film from the 40s with Bela Lugosi, but that's another thing. But we also have, the documentary Girl Rising. But we're going to start things off with the Tom Cruise sci-fi epic Oblivion. Let's just play the audio and then we'll break it down.
Okay.
The last Super Bowl was played right here.
Jason, tell me it was a classic.
Classic game. 80,000 people on their feet.
Seconds left on the clock.
So Hubie throws a Hail Mary.
Touchdown!
166, back online.
60 years ago, Earth was attacked. We won the war, but they destroyed half the planet. Everyone's been evacuated. Nothing human remains. We're here for drone repair with a mop-up crew.
This is Jack Harper. I'm good to go.
Two more weeks, Jack. Then we can finally leave and join the others. Don't take any chances.
We have an unidentified impact.
Don't ask too many questions.
They are human.
This is ordering you to return to tower.
Jack.
How do you know my name?
They're firing on survivors. Stand there!
What have you done?
I can't protect you.
They won't stop till they find me.
You're looking for the truth. That's where you'll find it.
You need to know what happened.
Why aren't you telling me?
Who are you?
Jack Mission is ordering you to stand down.
I'm not gonna do that.
This is the only way.
Future sounds and crashing and lasers
and things,
explosions and
guys,
alien
guys named Jack.
Yeah, his protagonist's named Jack.
Because this is the second Jack film for Tom Cruise in a row. Remember Jack Reacher?
Oh yeah,
that's right. So that should be coming out on DVD and Blu-ray fairly soon, and it features a cameo by Werner Herzog.
No, oh.
So that's at least worth renting, I think.
So there's that.
So there is that. I think we have some Herzog audio we'll play in a little bit. Not right now. We'll get to this. As we were watching the film, by the way, we saw this at the IMAX theater on Indy's South Side. If you get a chance, if you must see this, I would recommend seeing this at the IMAX theater. It is, if you must.
But you placed a pretty big caveat there at the front end. If you must see this.
That's a glowing review, isn't it? As we were walking out, the other IFJA members and myself, we miss you, Gina. I was wondering, I don't know if it was this film or maybe, I wondered if science fiction films, as well as action films, are those the two genres that could have the most, for lack of a better comparison, cover tune moments? And I'll explain why. Watching Oblivion felt like, at times, sci-fi's greatest hits. For instance, we had... The film begins with a very kind of lifeless, monotone voiceover narration by Mr. Cruise, which of course is reminiscent of Harrison Ford's monologue in his voiceover work in Blade Runner. And speaking of cop movies, remember you heard in the trailer, 2 more weeks and their job is done.
Yep.
Like the cop that's 2 weeks on the brink of retirement.
Yeah.
Not lasting.
And then things go awry.
This stuff got real.
Yep.
So there's that. There's the, and this looks a lot like the Will Smith, Jaden Smith movie that's coming out later this year, where
yes,
they're like
does.
The last humans on Earth. And there's that. There's also and by the way, Will Smith
looks a lot like I Am Legend.
I Am Legend, which was a lot like the Omega Man, which was a lot like the last man on Earth. Yes, I'm going back as far as 50 years for film titles. That's what a film show host does. Deal with it. But there are also moments where you see, in this case, New York City is buried, and that seems reminiscent at times of the original Planet of the Apes. There's a flying contraption, a hoopty, as Tom Cruise flies around in, that looks a lot like, and some action scenes that are coming straight out of Star Wars.
It's a flying hoopty.
So
when you're talking about... you said cover tunes, most...
Moments
science
that,
fiction and action movies lend themselves to
moments, I guess, or cliches or things that this
movie film versions of cover tunes.
Right.
Yes.
So we've seen.
I thought you were going to say like action and science fiction movies lend themselves most easily to like AC/DC soundtracks and like.
I'm going to get to that. I'm going to let you finish. No, I'm going to finish that. And there's a classic rock moment which I have to bring up in the film. That happens in this film.
Is it For Those About to Rock?
No, that has nothing to do with AC/DC.
Okay.
There's a fight scene, there's a chase shooting scene, you know, with lots of pew 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 involving the Star Wars looking jalopy, or I can't say hoopty. Apparently, I'm too old.
Hoopty.
So there's all of that. And there are moments where, visually it looks cool. This is the second film of Joseph Kosinski, whose first film was Tron Legacy, which looked really cool,
yes.
But was really, really silly. This one, not as silly, but there's a lot. The thing about this film is, by the way, Tom Cruise's character has dreams, and he keeps having this recurring dream. And what happens when you have recurring dreams in a film?
Does it happen?
Or does it?
So
there's that as well, and that's just not science fiction.
What's
just
real?
Yeah, that isn't just science fiction. That's also psychological thriller stuff. So there's all of that. Morgan Freeman shows up very briefly. He's got a couple of scenes, and he gets a nice check, and good for him on this one, smoking a big cigar. And just, I can't believe I'm saying this, but Tom Cruise is very serious in this. And the film is 2 hours, and it probably could have been half an hour shorter, because it felt like the first 20 minutes was Tom Cruise playing with his expensive toys. Like,
it's science fiction Judd Apatow?
Kind of. No, the female characters are written slightly better. But there's him riding an old-fashioned motorcycle, and there's him in his Star Wars-looking jalopy, and then him trying to grow some grass because the Earth is destroyed, and he's full of energy.
And him shooting hoops in the woods.
And we'll get to that, which comes with the classic rock
dream?
Moment. I'm not telling you.
No.
You know, I may not recommend the film, but I won't spoil it for people. Come on, what kind of show do you think this is? But there's a lot of him having fun and being playful, but he's also very serious. And I couldn't believe I was thinking this. I think I wanted cynical, smart alecky Tom Cruise in this film, like he was in the late 80s and 90s, early 90s. A Few Good Men, Color of Money, Top Gun, you know, those films. The kind of smart aleck, you know, cocky upstart that he was back in those days. And he's very serious in this. I think maybe a little too serious. So there's that. And then you have this woman he shares a house and other things with, Andrea Riseborough, who was also in Never Let Me Go, Happy Go Lucky, and Venus. And as I mentioned, Olga Korolenko, who was also in Seven Psychopaths, Max Payne, and Hitman, who is a woman from his dreams who shows up. That's not really giving away a whole lot. There's also a plot point about fantasy and reality in this film that I think was handled in Vanilla Sky, only in this film it is handled much better. So as I was talking with some of the other critics, some of them liked the homages to other sci-fi films. They were very distracting to me.
But it's not supposed, because it's not supposed to be that.
It shouldn't be distracting. The other thing
shouldn't be an homage to all these other science
fiction
films.
And this is, you know, and this is where the debate goes. Where's the fine line between an homage, you know, a Valentine, a wink and a nudge, and then just ripping off a film?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's Brian De Palma ripping off. I don't think it's that far over. The other thing about the film is it wants to be one of the kind of hippie sci-fi films of the late 60s, early 70s, films like Silent Running, The Onion had a really nice piece every day this week. They highlighted a film, just kind of more of a head-trippy, less Star Wars-y, there's the term, sci-fi films. And they talked about John Carpenter's Dark Star. They talk about Silent Running. Silent Running came up big time for me in this film, as well as, for me, one of the best science fiction films of the last few years, the Sam Rockwell film Moon. And there's a plot point in Moon that is used big time in Oblivion. And I think it wanted to be kind of an independent, trippy science fiction movie, but it couldn't because of its star. Mm. So you get a lot of chase scenes and a lot of things blowing up and going boom, and there's droids, and these are not the droids that are supposed to kill you.
These are not the droids we're looking for.
Yeah, they don't say that, but they could have. And so... just too much familiar stuff. If I have to start going, if I'm watching this film and I'm going, well, that's from Star Wars, and that's from this, and that's from that, that's very distracting.
Did they rip off Sunshine?
You know what? I've never seen Sunshine.
Really?
You have?
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute.
I saw that in theaters.
Oh, wow. So this was part of your original Saving Hollywood campaign.
Oh, dude, Sunshine was out in, like, 2007.
Yes, but you've seen so many films. I have so many films for you to see, but you've seen Sunshine.
Yeah.
That is the wonder of film going, ladies and gentlemen. So, and oh, by the way, I should mention also, for those who, I guess, care, I'm going to butcher this. I'm going to be Chris Lloyd. Nicolaj Coster-Waldau. He's a guy in Game of Thrones. He's in this film as well.
Or Got.
Is that how you do it? No, hey. Got. No, I'm not initializing. Sorry, I'm too old. I can't initialize. Melissa Leo shows up in this film as well. And even though she does not have a speaking role, I'm very glad that she's getting work that's not always stunt work, but not always. But Zoe Bell is in this. And if you pick up today's Indianapolis Star, there is an article by Roger Moore, Christopher Lloyd's friend, about Zoe Bell, which is very, very cool. You know Zoe Bell?
No.
Oh, yes, you do. She was Uma Thurman's stunt double in Kill Bill, and she's the woman that rides the car hood in Death Proof.
Yeah, I didn't see Death
Proof. You did not see Grindhouse.
I'm not up, no, and I'm not up on my stunt doubles.
You've not, but you obviously saw her work in Kill Bill. You just didn't know it.
Yeah.
So, and she was also in Whip It.
Oh.
The Ellen Page roller derby movie.
Oh, yes.
That Gina endorses.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, nice article, nice picture as well. But no, it's cool that Zoe Bell's getting a lot of notoriety, and she's along for the ride as well. So, I guess do we have a? Wasn't
I think
that
you
great?
Said it best initially when you said, "If you must see this." So, but we do we have need... Chris here.
Yeah, it's not hella bad.
It's just distracting.
We also have.
we can't tell you where
it's
that's
from.
It's
very distracting, dude.
Yeah.
We also have.
There was about 5 minutes where they did cool stuff, even though no one in the movie was cool. But I was willing to give them coolness points for what they were doing.
That's pretty good. So, and don't worry, if you missed this, I guess Will Smith's film, we'll feature it out there.
Yeah.
There are other signs. Omega Man, I'd say check that out. Check out Silent Running. Check out Moon if you want, for me, better science fiction films. So, big movie, and it opened, and there's that. All right, Kobe, what is happening at your alma mater?
Oh, at my alma mater?
Yes.
Let's just see. IU Cinema.
Yes.
Actually, wait a minute. I'm sorry. If you don't have any plans tonight or this weekend, and it's okay if you don't. IU Cinema tonight, 7 o'clock. The films of Roberta Torre, 2006, The Dark Sea, and tomorrow at 7 o'clock, Lost Kisses from 2010. And then Sunday, April 21st, 3 o'clock, How Tasty Was My Little Frenchman from 1971 in the 50 Years of Brazilian Cinema.
Oh, hey, the cool down.
Line. Yep. Los Cool Down, and also at 6:30, Memoirs of Prison from 1984 from Brazil as well.
And at the IMA?
At the IMA tonight, 7:30. Tonight being Friday, if you're listening to this Sunday, sorry, too late. Show people, 7:30.
And we still might do a Sunday live show.
Oh, yeah.
And if you pay attention and you send us a note, at either at Matthew Soci or at M Soci at W.
Now pay attention.
M Soci at WFY. You might get a prize package. You won't get cash, but you'll get a prize package. So we'll see about that. Oh, and big kudos to Jim Poyser at Nuvo, who did a write up in this week's Nuvo about the documentary Everglades of the North, a story of the Grand Kankakee Marsh, which you can see on WFYI Television Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. All right, we are going to come back after the break. We're going to have a couple of short DVD talks.
DVD talks?
DVD reviews is what I meant. And my talk, singular, with Stuart McLean of the Vinyl Cafe. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org.
He's a wise guy.
Have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs.
You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store.
Blockbuster Video. Wow, what a difference.
And the video store is open, or the red or blue box at your gas station or grocery store.
Or Mattflix, if you know Matt, like I do.
That's right. And by the way, I swear, today we will have What Is Kobe Watching? I know we kind of pushed him aside like Matt Damon. Yeah, you did. We have not talked about it, though.
What did I see?
Bullet. We haven't talked about Bullet yet.
Yeah.
Because we were going to, and then we got caught up in the show. Show's nonsense. And then I was gone for 2 weeks, and now we're back. So anyway, I'm gonna be short with this because it was actually a small list. For old titles on Criterion, Repo Man. So that's the one with Emilio Estevez and Harry Dean Stanton, where Estevez wants to be a repo man. He learns from grizzled old veteran Harry Dean Stanton, directed by Alex Cox. I'm impressed it's on Criterion. It's also a fun write-up in the cult movie world, so go check that out. There is also a double feature of Jackie Chan Police Story 1 and 2. Lots of cool stunts. This is old-school Jackie Chan swinging from buses, the great jump through the mall. That's worth checking out as well. Earlier this week, it came out, I believe, on Monday, but the big-budgeted Western directed by Sam Peckinpah, Major Dundee. This is the one that he did after Ride the High Country, but before The Wild Bunch. So he shot it. It was with Charlton Heston and Richard Harris, and it's Heston leads a fight during the Civil War, and he has Richard Harris and other various prisoners who have to work along with him. It's either, you know, like the Dirty Dozen, only this was first. You either fight or die, and there's that. And, of course, it was much a troubled shoot, and Peckinpah was fired after filming was completed, so he couldn't edit it, and now it's done. However, the big title out on DVD this week and Blu-ray, because nobody wanted to compete against it, the Academy Award-winning film Django Unchained.
Django, Django, Django.
D is silent. Django. Yeah, so an Academy Award winner for number two for Christoph Waltz.
Awesome.
Well-deserved. I still think he should have been a lead, but that's another story and another time. But, of course, he is a German dentist who's also a bounty hunter who teams up with recently freed slave, because of him, Jamie Foxx. Schultz, that's Christoph Waltz's character, is looking for a bounty, and Django, that's Jamie Foxx, is looking for his woman. And they have to get through creepy land slave owner Leonardo DiCaprio as well. Quentin Tarantino won his second Academy Award for the screenplay. It is a bloody homage to not just spaghetti westerns, but slaves and white guys working together films. There's a few of those, like Skin Game and The Scalp Hunters. And there's the runaway slave films like that starred Fred Williamson, such as, and I'll have to reword it because I can't say it, The Soul of Charlie and The Legend of Charlie, only there's a word before Charlie. Also some of the slave dramas like Mandingo and Drum. So it is a lot like Inglourious Basterds. I think if it weren't for the success of Inglourious Basterds, Django Unchained wouldn't have been made. It's part of his revenge genre, and we move from a vengeful Jews to vengeful African Americans who are just going after slave owners. So it is kind of what it is. 2 hours and 40 minutes, and it's not all 2 hours and 40 minutes of brutality. There's one really gut wrenching scene involving dogs and a slave near the end, and in the last 30 minutes. So definitely worth checking out. I enjoyed
it. Wow, that'd be some good film in there, Mr. Soci.
You had to pick that one, didn't you? Yep. For Django Unchained.
Y'all love it, so
y'all.
All right, so
it was unbelievable.
Yes, and even though Jeff Marker didn't like it, that's okay. We have various opinions here at Film Sociology. All right, Sunday afternoon.
Always do the right thing, Matt Soci.
Yes, stop with that. at 2:30 this Sunday at Hilbert Circle Theater is the return of the Vinyl Cafe with Stuart McLean, special guest, musical guest Harry Manx, and I'm going to replay for you because it sounds like fresh air. It's an archive interview with myself and Stuart McLean. This is from the first appearance that Stuart had here in Indianapolis.
Deep
and
cuts on Film Sociology.
<That's right. laughs> Long cuts, too. Because you know why? NPR and WFYI listeners, long attention spans.
Yep.
So here's my chat about the Canadian film history and industry with Stuart McLean. Joining me on Film Sociology is the creator, the writer, the host, the man who is the Vinyl Cafe, Stuart McLean. He's going to be at the Hilbert Circle Theater Sunday afternoon at 2:30. How you doing, Stuart?
I'm very well. Thank you very much.
Good to have you back in town. This will be your second time in Indianapolis, and we heard you're going to be taping this time.
Yeah, we're taping in Indianapolis and in Cleveland on this tour, which is the first time we've ever taped in the state. So it's a bit of a deal for us.
Well, we appreciate being a part of that deal. Why don't you tell us a little bit about at least some of the music and maybe a sample of the stories that are going to be done on Sunday?
We've got Luc Doucette and his wife, Melissa McClellan, touring with us. They're just back off the Sarah McLachlan North American tour. And before that, Melissa had been on the Lilith Fair. I think they've both been on Lilith Fair. They're both... what can I say about them? She's an amazing singer. She's just one of the great young singers in the country right now. And Luke is a fabulous guitar player. He's been playing with Sarah for 20 years as her guitarist. So they're great. Both of them are terrific musicians, and I'm really enjoying listening to them. Stories, we got three stories. We got two brand new Dave and Morley stories and an old favorite to boot. The new ones. Let me see. One of them, Dave visits an old friend in a hospital and decides that the guy needs to go for a walk, and so he busts him out of hospital and chaos ensues. And in the other one, Morley is clean. It's springtime and Morley's down in the basement cleaning out the just kind of giving the house a haircut, trying to clean things up a bit. And she finds an old doll in the basement that she doesn't remember, and that sends them both off, both Dave and Morley, off on a circuitous path through their memories, trying to figure out where this doll came from and who it might have belonged to.
Hey, I was curious, do you get people yelling story requests at your shows?
Yeah, sometimes, especially the turkey story is the one they like the most. If I give people a chance, they'll be asking for that one.
And then you have a four-hour show.
We have about a, yeah, exactly.
Well, going back a little bit, I was curious, do you remember the name of the movie theater in your neighborhood growing up? Do you remember going to?
Oh, yeah, there was the Kent Theater and the Avenue Theater. The Avenue Theater, which had rumored to have a private screening room where you could have birthday parties, but I was never, I guess it was a corral where they'd put kids in where they wouldn't, mess up with everybody else. But I never got to it. But in Montreal, actually, film wasn't a big deal for kids because there was a horrible fire in Montreal in a theater in the 1920s where 75 kids at a matinee were killed, were suffocated mostly trying to get out. It was one of those awful events where the doors opened in instead of out and an exit was barred. And in fact, that fire was key for making across North America for making it imperative to have exit doors open outwards instead of inwards.
I see.
And in a complicated and political development, the Roman Catholic Church, which didn't like the idea of popular film and which more or less controlled Quebec, the province of Quebec, the French-speaking province of Quebec, used the disaster to get what something that it had been trying to get for a long time, which was to keep kids out of theaters. So for close to 40 years, from the 20s up until the 60s, if you were under 16, you couldn't get into a movie theater in Montreal, where I grew up. Well, there was no Saturday matinees for kids. It was just they finally brought in at some point in the early 60s. They decided it would be okay to have family films, and kids could attend a matinee if their parents came with them. And I think the very first movie I saw was a Walt Disney nature film. It was the content was very carefully looked at before kids were allowed in. It was Perry the Squirrel, which was I have to say, although I was very excited to be going to my first movie in a theater, was a bit of a disappointment because it wasn't Sinbad the Sailor Man or Davy Crockett or some of these other adventures I'd seen advertised in the movie pages. And there you go.
It seems like it was even stricter than the Motion Picture Association of America here in the States.
Oh, it was totally. I mean, you just couldn't go into a theater. That was it. You were just not allowed in.
Now, was there a lot of, like, Sunday or Saturday afternoon television, like movies on TV?
Not that I remember, which might have been a good thing, you know, because television only really arrived in Canada. Our first TV was for the coronation. When Queen Elizabeth was coronated, people sort of went out and bought television sets so they could see that. But really, people didn't have TVs until the late 50s. So we were told just to go out and play, and go and play.
Boy, and longer attention spans.
Well, I've got a friend. You're right about that. I have a friend who works in television news who on his desk has a document where he every year he monitors and keeps track of the average length of clips in news pieces. And I think when he started, the clip being the interview section of the of the piece where the reporter would throws to the politician who has something to say or whatever, or the grieving widow or whoever you got in the story. And he said in the 60s they used to be 30 to 40 seconds long, and now they're under 10 seconds, these clips. So everything has to move so much faster today.
Now, did you guys have a lot of – were there a lot of drive-ins in Canada?
Now, that's funny you should ask that. I was in Austin, Texas last week. And I went to an urban drive-in in the middle of downtown Austin. We a drive-in in a real seedy part of town, with room for 13 cars, and but with all vintage equipment, vintage hookups, and we sat in our car and watched Beach Blanket Bingo.
Oh my!
And ate vintage candy in this industrial part of Austin. It was fabulous. No, going to a drive-in was always my great desire. Because once again, you weren't allowed to go to those. But I finally had my dream come true in Austin last week.
One of the things that's always been noted is it seems like the U.S. film industry has always overshadowed a lot of going on of what was happening up in Canada. When did that begin?
Well, the Canadian film industry kind of began during World War II. A guy by the name of David Grierson, there were films made before that, but a guy by the name of David Grierson was famously brought over from England to set up the National Film Board of Canada.
Which was formed in 1939.
And it was begun as a kind of a propaganda arm, really. It was there to produce films to encourage patriotism during World War II. But it very quickly, after the war, morphed into this hotbed of creativity and became, because of Grierson, famous for its, for a documentary film is what it first became known as, and then for animation. The NFB was made a lot of Oscar-winning animated shorts and a lot of great documentaries. Canada and Canadians have had a long history of being very strong in both those things and have peopled a lot of American documentary shows over the years, have provided the talent for that. But we've never really developed in the way that America or even, say, Australia has a strong feature film industry. We've turned into of our own with a strong Canadian identity. We've ended up becoming a service industry. We're known as Hollywood North,
right.
And a lot of American productions will come to Canada and work with Canadian studios, with Canadian on Canadian lots and Canadian with Canadian directors, actors, whatever. But they are largely American-driven films. For a while, they came up because the dollar was the Canadian dollar was lower than the American, so it was economic for people to come to Canada to shoot films. And on the Canadian side, it was thought of as a way we could develop the industry, but the Canadian industry never developed. We're not telling our own stories.
Right.
We're telling your stories more than ours.
Well, I remember reading a piece on how there were two films that were an example of that, of not showing the Canadian identity, even though it was a massive amount of Canadian work. One was Porky's, directed by Bob Clark directed that,
mm-hmm.
and Meatballs with Bill Murray. And I think they said the only Canadian identity was a Canadiens jersey on the wall.
Well, and that's the problem is we don't have distribution. It's very interesting. The music business, we're a small country. I mean, we're a huge country, but we're small geographically, but our population is small. And the music business, the government policy, public policy became, they recognized that in order to build a Canadian music industry, they had to support it. And the way they supported it is it became law. There was legislation made that radio stations in Canada had to play a certain amount of Canadian content.
Mm-hmm.
And they grumbled about this at the beginning. At first it was 25. It ranges between 25 to 50% Canadian content music, depending on the type of station and the type of music. And the definition of what Canadian music is fairly broad. It has to have a certain component of either recorded in Canada, written in Canada, performed by Canadian musicians, sung by a Canadian singer. You don't have to hit all four, but you have to get a certain percentage of those four.
Mm-hmm.
And because this existed, and because Canadians therefore started hearing Canadian music, Canadian stars started to emerge, because musicians could afford to stay in the business, and if you've got enough people doing it and making their living doing it, finally those stars will emerge. And that's why people like Katie Lang and Joni Mitchell and Randy Bachman and Leonard Cohen and came out of the fog. They wouldn't have existed unless this support had been there. That never happened with film.
It didn't happen at the multiplexes.
The movie theaters weren't forced to show the Canadian movies. So any kind of small Canadian movie that might have emerged, like you saw emerge out of Australia, didn't happen. And we became the service guys for the American, for Hollywood. And therefore, we became Hollywood North rather than Canada, and we were producing Meatballs, and as you said, instead of some small movie that might in some way tell the story of who we are, and not in an earnest way, but in a fictional way, the way movies can do that.
I would say, how big of an impact were the tax shelter films of the 70s and 80s? Or was there
Well, the government realized they had to do something to support movies. They went at it that way instead of the distribution. And so if you invested in a movie, you got to deduct it from your income tax. So everybody was making – you could make these $10,000 investments in a movie, and in the first year you get to write off $7,000, and the second year you got to write off another $7,000, and therefore you got your money back without the movie having to make money. And what happened is nobody cared what movies they were making. They just cared that they got these – that movies were being made you could invest in. And the emphasis became on the deal rather than on the film itself. And so lots of movies were made while these tax shelters were going, but they were movies that nobody wanted to see.
Well, I actually wound up seeing a few of those as a kid. And I know – I think it was discovered in 1979 that more than half of the 66 – Canadian-produced films weren't even released.
But they made investors very happy because they got their tax credits. Well, it's a very interesting to compare the different attempts at government trying to manipulate public policy in order to affect the artistic world and to try and support the artistic world, and how it succeeded in the music industry in creating this homegrown music industry, and how it's also succeeded in the film industry, because there is a vibrant film industry in Canada, but it isn't telling our stories. It's servicing Hollywood as opposed to telling the Canadian story. And when you listen to Joni Mitchell, when you listen to the band, when you listen to Leonard Cohen, you can tell they're deeply involved with their Canadian roots. They're and are reflecting the country in some way, but the films aren't.
I think of a couple directors, and you mentioned earlier there's a number of actors and directors and producers who, originally are from Canada and then moved to the United States. And, everybody from Ivan Reitman to David Cronenberg. But two directors I think of, if you want to have a Canadian director, I think of Adam McGoyan and Guy Madden. How are they? Are they looked upon regarded highly in Canada?
Well, they're regarded highly by critics.
Right.
And they're regarded highly by film festivals, but their films don't. Aren't in wide distribution across the country, and those guys are not making films that would necessarily
Open in 3,000 screens.
No, they're making more idiosyncratic and many would say interesting films, but they're not making those. You see, that's what we've got. We've got, and on the other end of the spectrum, James Cameron, who made Avatar and Titanic, the two largest grossing films in history. He's a Canadian, but he's not making Canadian stories. So we have both ends of the spectrum covered. We've got the guys who've developed through the Hollywood studio end of things, and we've got the artistic small film being made, but we don't have the guys in the middle, the men or the women in the middle of the road making, or in the middle of the pack, making small popular movies that reflect our story.
So we're not going to have James Cameron doing a film version of the Trailer Park Boys.
Well, he might, but it'll be a toss off. It'll be something that he does at some point in his career to because his conscience is nagging him.
Right. Are you familiar with a website called Canucksploitation?
No, I'm not.
It's a guide to the B movies from Canada from like the 50s through the 90s.
That sounds like fun.
Well, it is, because I was going through some of these, and as a kid, I saw some of these films in theaters, saw them on video, saw them in on cable, and only as I got older and more into this business, I found out that it was a Canadian-made film. Films like the original Black Christmas, which I know is a cult classic for horror fans, The Changeling, The Brood. Obviously, a lot of these are horror films, but films like Space Hunter, Adventures in the Forbidden Zone, I remember seeing that as a kid. Even in my hometown of Flint, Michigan, we got The Gray Fox, the Richard Farnsworth Western, which I thought was just fantastic.
And that was a great movie, and that was well seen across Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the exception that proves the rule. That's that's the sort of film that I'm talking about that we should be making more of.
And a film like Black Robe, which did a better version of the Dances with Wolves story. So, Stuart, I'm curious, do you get to see any movies when you're on the road, and how often do you get to see stuff at home, when you're at home?
These days, first off, do I get to see movies on the road? Never. Occasionally we have a night off, but usually if we have a day off between shows, it's a travel day, and we're moving from one place to the other, and we'll be on the bus for 10 hours. And by the time you come to the hotel, if you've been traveling on the bus all day, the idea of going and sitting in a movie theater just isn't what I feel like anyway. You tend to just want to settle down in your room and read or go for a walk. At home, I'm a writer these days, is how I spend most of my time, and I seem to always be on a deadline. Which is a writer's best friend. I'm not complaining about being on a deadline. I think when people ask me about how what's my advice to being a better or being a writer, I always say find yourself a deadline, because it's what will make you sit down in your chair and get writing. And a deadline can be anything. It can be an assignment from somebody. It can be a creative writing class. It can be a writing group. Whatever it is, it just has to be something that forces you to produce. So I find that I'm spending a lot of my time producing. I did, however, for Christmas, make my sons a little book this year, where I sent them a book with my favorite movies of all time, and with a little explanation as to what each movie was and why it was important to me. And so I have been thinking about the films of my life and realized during the exercise that movies had been more important to me than I thought.
Can you give me a sample?
Now I thought to myself, oh, my goodness, now I open my mouth, I'm going to have to
say something.
Say them. Well, my favorite movie of all time was Lawrence of Arabia. That was on the list of 10. There was a movie called The Flim Flam Man.
With George C. Scott, yeah.
You know it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, con artist film.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I was a bit of a con artist myself as a young guy, and it was, I think that movie resonated with me in a big way, because I'm so impressed that you know it, because I went to see it without knowing what it was about, and that and it just had this great it spoke to me, and it was about a con artist who took a young lad under his wings and taught him the game, and I desperately wanted to be that young boy.
I had a similar feeling, and this is another example of I saw the film not knowing it was a Canadian film, but enjoyed it nonetheless. Was The Apprenticeship of Duddy Kravitz?
No, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah, and I know the author of that film had another one of his books was made into a movie last year, Barney's Version.
Yes, that's right. Another one of Richler's book was made into.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a Barney's Version is a great book, and that I haven't. I'm looking forward to seeing that movie. I haven't seen that. Seen it yet.
I haven't read it, but I thought Giamatti was excellent in it, and I really, really enjoyed it. In fact, it looked like something Richard Dreyfuss or Dustin Hoffman would have starred in 40 years ago.
Well, that's great to hear. It's a great book, actually. If you feel like a read, I'm glad to hear the film's good, but the book was great, too.
Cool. I'll be on the lookout for it. Now, you were going to say something.
Well, I was thinking of the other films. Another one that was on my list, and these were not films that I put on the list because they were necessarily great movies, but because they spoke to me in a important way at a different, you know, different parts of my life. Mm-hmm. Another one was a little documentary. We're talking about documentaries made in the '60s out of California called Skater Dater, which is a 12-minute movie with no dialogue, which actually I learned later as I was kind of researching the thing to tell my boys about it. I either won or was nominated for an Oscar as the documentary of the year, and it was a piece about little boys learning how to skateboarding in somewhere in California, and then one of them seeing a girl on a bicycle and being diverted to her as he grew, you know, as his loyalty to the group of skateboarders was challenged by the pretty blonde thing on the bicycle. It was a lovely little movie, and I just watched it the other day. It's very fun. It's a fun exercise to go through, to try and go through the movies of your life and choose 10, which are the movies of your life that spoke to you in some way. And then to find them. It's hard to find these films.
Yeah, that's the other thing. I mean, with the Canexploitation website, yeah, a lot of these films are not on DVD. I think part of it is maybe who owns the rights to what and how do you convert them. But, yeah, there's still a number of films, no matter where they're made, that haven't made it to DVD or Blu-ray or online yet. So there is still a bit of a hunting feel, I guess, kind of like going into a record store and looking for an old album that's out of print.
Which makes it all the more fun.
I agree. Yeah. So the search keeps going, I guess.
Well, for me, and that's because I've told them I'll get them all the movies, and I think I've got four or five so far, and I'm looking for having that as a little project and on the back burner is kind of fun.
Well, in baseball, you're doing great.
Well, you're right.
Hey, just curious, what do you think, what are some of the movies Dave and Morley would probably watch?
Well, Dave would probably be watching Meatballs. Proudly, with a Canadian beer in his hand.
Sounds like my college days.
What would Morley be watching?
I mean, do we do standard romantic comedies, or, you know, do they have to fight over what they're going to go see, what they're going to watch? Give and take, as a lot of spouses do.
You see, now you've given me some food for thought here. I can't answer it, but I think I'm going to try.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's a good one. I think they would like romantic comedies. I think they, you know, Sleepless in Seattle and what are some of those Hugh Grant movies?
Four Weddings and a Funeral, Love Actually. Yeah, Love Actually was just on cable last night. I think it's on a 24-hour loop. It's law, apparently. Well, Stuart, I really, really appreciate your time. And I guess you always try to get Canadian musicians on your show. I'm waiting for you to put the band Anvil on your show someday.
Okay. I think don't hold your No offense to the band Anvil. I don't even know them. But I fear that just the name sounds like it won't be – they won't – God love them. Won't be on our show.
Canadian metal bands that are in their 50s? No. Well, it was worth a shot.
Well, maybe we could do them unplugged.
Hey, there you go. I mean, it's a really fine, fine documentary. It's called Anvil, The Story of Anvil.
Yeah, I think I've heard of it, but I haven't seen it.
Yeah, some people have said if Spinal Tap were real. But it's a sweet story because you have these two, especially the two original members, who have been slugging it out in the music world for over 30 years, and they won't give up. It's very inspiring. And but yeah, there's a lot of loud music and silliness along the way.
Well, I'll add it to my list.
And now it's time for What is Kobe Watching?
What is Kobe watching?
Okay, I guess Kobe was doing what I told him to do. I was also saying, disregard the beginning of it, because this was from his second visit to the Vinyl Cafe. And, of course, Stuart's going to be at the Vinyl Cafe, and the Vinyl Cafe will be at Hilbert Circle Theater this Sunday at 2:30 p.m. with musical guest Harry Manx. It's going to be a lot of fun. You can hear Harry Manx music on the Blues House Party tomorrow night on HD1 at 8 o'clock. All right, the Phoenix has risen
again
after several weeks. Now, you told me you finally got around. In fact, apparently I have to start throwing more movies in your general direction.
Through that whole stack of movies that you gave me in, September, October?
You finally got around.
I finally made it through all of them, the last of which being Bullet.
Steve McQueen.
Yes.
Great car chase. Your thoughts?
I had heard about Bullet, knowing it's obviously famous for the car chase. So the whole time I'm watching, I'm waiting for, okay, when's it going to happen? And I thought it was going to be car chase after awesome car chase after awesome car chase.
Or
after
as
awesome
Jarrett
car
Moore
chase.
Once brought up to you.
So you thought it was going to be the Fast and the Furious?
Yeah, not 1968.
No. Nope, not
this
at all.
This is late 60s.
Different time. Very obvious.
But you didn't pay any attention to the cop story. And Jacqueline Bisset.
Well, yeah, Jacqueline Bisset was cool. Eating her frosted mini wheats.
No, actual cereal, folks. That's not a euphemism.
Yeah. But the whole time I'm waiting for this awesome car chase to happen, and it happens, and I think I like the French Connection better.
Well, okay, but the film in and of itself. It's sounding like late 60s cop film for Kobe with cool car chase and Jacqueline Bisset.
Yeah, it's like you see Steve McQueen like do his work to get his check, and then you see him like do an hour and 40 minutes of other crap
and downshift 12 times in a row.
Yeah,
and look cool. All right,
and everybody's so calm during the car chase.
We did not have the yelly, screamy.
You know what? Maybe it was the fact that there was no like pumping music behind it or anything to like.
It had a pretty good score.
Edge.
That's Lalo Schifrin. You know, Brian G. Hartz may take umbrage with you on that one, sir.
Umbrage. He took
umbrage
with us talking about potboilers.
He
maybe
did.
With me talking about potboilers.
No, he would probably throw it my way too, because we do not know what that use of that word. So okay, well there you go. You got to see one of the.
I've got Troll 2, and I've got Birdemic now.
And boy, Bianca's gonna love those.
So yeah, I think I'm gonna do Birdemic tonight
on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
Yes, on Her Majesty's Secret Service.
So okay, well good. Good to have. What is Kobe watching back? I'll because of time.
It's good to be back.
It's good to be. Because of time, I'm just gonna do it. We're gonna go to dead people we like because we don't have time for dead people we don't like. Irish actress Helena Carroll died. She was 84 years old. Stage actress, did a little bit of TV, but she was also in a film I made Kobe watch. She was in the Robert Mitchum film, The Friends of Eddie Coyle. She played Sheila Coyle. She played Mitchum's wife. She was also in The Jerk, The Dead, the John Huston's last film. She was also Mrs. Shannon in The Mambo Kings. But the big one for you pop culture nerds out there, actor Richard Le Parmentier died this past week. He was 66 years old. He was the Death Star commander, General Motti, who was choked by Darth Vader in Star Wars.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that guy, the guy who's choked at the beginning. So, again, did a lot of screen and stage work. Other noted films, he had small roles in Rollerball, the original good Rollerball, not the god-awful remake.
That was terrible.
The People That Time Forgot, which I actually just watched a few weeks ago with Doug McClure and Patrick Wayne. He was a sheik. He played a sheik in Valentino, the Ken Russell film, which we talked about on Into the Archives. He played a U.S. aide in the James Bond film Octopussy, and he was Lieutenant Santino in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Just saw that, too.
He is also... We'll get to that next week on What is Kobe Watching. He was also a reporter in Superman 2, which featured actress Sarah Douglas. She was Ursa, you know, the big tall one, female villainess, and they got married. Way to go, Richard. And, of course, he also appeared in The People That Time Forgot as well. So thank you for getting choked, Richard. All right. Here's some words to live by.
Silent Green is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
So until next week, go see a good movie. You deserve it. Go check out Canucksploitation.com. Go check out Stuart McLean and the Vinyl Cafe Sunday at Hilbert Circle Theater with Harry Manx. I'll be there. Emma will be there. Kobe might be there as well. And stay tough, Boston. And this is the Detroit guy saying this. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org.
We gone. Good night, Fort Myers.